Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with you, along with Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening, I'm sorry, I'm losing track here. I got so much stuff in front of me. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com and listen to the program streaming live there. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and hear the program streaming live there also. That's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Or you can listen to it from TuneIn. TuneIn is a free app. You can download it on any of your devices, your laptop, your desktop, your tablet, your iPhone. Any of your devices, you can download TuneIn free app. And in that search engine, type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll see the icon and you can listen to the program live. You can even stream it into your car. That's Time for an Awakening with the app to live stream on TuneIn. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Facebook. Time for Awakening has a Facebook fan page there. In the search engine, type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. Time for Awakening Media has also been launched. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, timeforawakening.com. Put that in your address bar. That should be one of your favorites, and that'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, articles, blogs, podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, and even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com. It'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we have an exciting program scheduled. Out of Seattle, Washington, Brother Y. King Garrett is with us. His Africa Town project in Seattle, really, I want you to really hear what's going on out there. This brother is really doing some things, and it can be a model to a lot of our other cities around this country. He'll be with us this evening to talk about the Africa Town Project in Seattle, Washington, and joining us in the conversation in the second hour will be businessman, author, syndicated columnist, and a strong advocate for economic empowerment for African Americans throughout this country. You can read his blogs that comes out weekly. You can read, you can also go to the website Blackonomics. Professor James Klingman will join the conversation later on in the second hour. But we're going to get right into it with our first guest, Brother Y. King Garrett, and we'll start the conversation with Brother Y. King after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m.
Welcome back, Elliot and Reggie. To Time for an Awakening. And before we get started this evening, I just want to pull everybody's coat to the program Revive. It airs on timeforawakening.com on Wednesday evenings, 8 to 10, and a broadcast today, which was 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sister Proof of Consciousness has an exciting program directed towards black millennials. It's called Revive with host Proof of Consciousness, and it airs Wednesday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m., and Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on timeforanawakening.com. Check it out. We're going to have a more exciting programs being added to Time for an Awakening. Possibly by the end of this month, I know by around the 1st of March, we'll be adding the program out of Los Angeles, Shifting Paradigms, will be joining the lineup, and possibly 2 days also. So Time for Awakening is growing, and we're going to keep on moving and putting out information and letting our people know exactly what's going on nationwide and worldwide. Again, exciting program lined up for this evening. Our first guest is a brother that's doing some things out there on the West Coast, and I want you to hear what he's doing because I believe this can be a model for other cities around the country. We have, as our guest waiting on the line, a community builder, third-generation community builder, founder and director of Umoja Peace Center, and chief strategist for the Africa Town Seattle Community Development Initiative. Brother Y. King Garrett is with us. And before I page in Brother Y. King, let's hear from our co-host, community activist, tour guide at the African American History Museum in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us on the line. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. Good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm looking forward to the dialogue and the learning process Brother Y. King is about to share with us.
Well, that Brother Y. King is waiting on the line for us, and I'm going to bring him in right now. Brother Y. King, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Good evening. I'm peace. I'm doing well. I appreciate the opportunity to be a part of the conversation.
I'm glad that you're here. You're here on the program, myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing, Brother Y. King?
I'm well. Yourself?
Good, good, good.
Brother Y. King, you know, I was excited to hear about what you were doing. Brother Richard pulled my coat. I kind of consider myself up on some things that's going on, but Brother Richard pulled my coat, and I was totally taken off guard by what you're doing out there in Seattle. And that kind of goes to black media, that we don't have a lot of conscious black media outlets, but we always utilize Time for Awakening to showcase what our people are doing nationwide and worldwide. You're just one of the family. I want you to take your time with us. Tell us about the Africa Town Seattle project. And before you start talking about the project, because there's a lot of tentacles, it's a lot of different branches that's very interesting dealing with Africa Town, and I want you to expand on each one of them. But before you get to that, Brother Y. King, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you became a community builder. You know, and by me reading about you, I've seen something very interesting. You'll probably mention it, but if you don't, I'm sure I'll mention it to our listening audience. But tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to this point.
Sure. So I'm born and raised in Seattle, and I was, as you said, you know, I'd like to say I'm a third generation to just give, you know, reverence to, you know, the those that came before me, just in my own family. You know, obviously there's many abroad that have come before us in doing the work, but just personally, my exposure to the importance of community building, community service, and came through growing up. My father, who was a community, you know, very active community member of the community and builder, always focused on the importance of building institutions, you know, and my father, Omar, here in Seattle. And then my grandfather was also who migrated to Seattle, you know, that brought our family out here. He was also involved. It was one of the founders of the Liberty Bank, which was one of the which was the first black bank west of the Mississippi that was established in 1968. And, you know, my father was very active in a variety of community development initiatives and protecting from apartheid to establishing the African American Heritage Museum and Culture Center here, which was actually occupation of a building after fighting to stop a police precinct from being built in the heart of the black community, you know. And so growing up, being aware of those things, and then after I graduated from high school, I actually relocated with my family in the New York area, and also grew and was brought in and learned and developed within the 5% Nation of God on Earth, which has a very strong focus on community building and working with young people and seeking out community control. So just a variety of consistent exposure to people who held the value of genuine, true service to our community, from the ground level, from the street level, from the grassroots.
You know, you mentioned it. You kind of beat me to it. Talk a little bit about your grandfather. He had the first black bank, according to published report I read, on the West Coast. But you said west of the Mississippi. Talk a little bit about, is your grandfather still with us?
He's not. He passed on, but he was an electrical engineer, one of the first black electrical engineers in the Northwest, and obviously had challenges around working, based on, you know, his education, at his education level, but became an electrician and property developer, and also worked with the government. And eventually, he was also a member of the Prince Hall, and with a number of his other Masonic brothers, and they established first the credit union, and eventually established the bank, as, you know, the community was redlined and capital access to capital was an issue and remains to be an issue to this day for our community to grow. So yeah, the bank was established in 1968 and was in service for 20 years before it ran into its issues with institutionalized racism and things of that nature. So,
okay.
We have a new development of the site, which will honor that legacy with.
And that's what I want to get in.
Housing. And, affordable housing to mitigate the displacement of our of the black community from its historic place in the Central District. So the Central District of Seattle is where black people have been for over 130 years. And obviously, like many urban communities around the nation, is experiencing extreme displacement pressure with gentrification. And so this project will honor that legacy of empowering our community by providing space for residents as well as businesses in our community to be able to stay, be in a commercial space, and for contractors to work on it. So kind of looking at the whole project as a empowerment and community economic development opportunity for our community.
You know, when folks think of cities and cities with black populations, I think the last city on people's minds would be Seattle. But Seattle is an old city. Like you said, it was blacks have been there for over 130 years. The pioneer, and the brother's name escapes me, that brought 12 acres of land that formed the Central District that you're talking about, that blacks have been there for over 130 years. So it's an old city for our people to have been there. And our people worked. Go ahead.
Yes, and folks have made their mark. William Gross is the pioneer's name, and he was entrepreneur, a hotelier, a restaurateur, and made a major impact in the city, even outside the black community.
Okay.
Through his work. And yeah, Seattle has definitely, you know, when I'm traveling, people are like, oh, we didn't know there was black people in Seattle. But I think there has been a lot of work done. I mean, a lot of people don't know that the first chapter of the Black Panther Party outside of California was in Seattle, and there was a lot of work that was done around that. And, you know, it was a major participant of black, you know, jazz. You know, Quincy Jones got his start, Ray Charles, you know, Jimi Hendrix comes out of our same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
There is some history here of blacks being pioneering, entrepreneurial, innovative, and self-determining.
You know, let's get into a little bit of the Africa Town project. You know, I read published reports that they have other towns in Seattle, Greek town, Asian town, different areas where it's economic hubs for nationalist groups or different nations. When you step to the fore to establish Africa Town project in the Central District, what was the response? First among some of our people, because in certain sectors, I hear you laughing, in certain sectors, it's difficult to get some of our people together. But, you know, from what I've seen here, you've done tremendous work. Talk about, now, I'm not even talking about the interference that you got outside of the black community, because I know that was there. But talk about how easy or how difficult was it to get a lot of our people on the same page to move forward with what you did?
Right, sure. That's a great question. So one thing I will say is that we did not establish Africa Town per se, because the community was already the place of people of African descent, those that have migrated from the South, but also there's a large population that have migrated directly from Africa within the last 20 to 30 years from Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia. So there are those institutions, businesses, restaurants, community centers, religious institutions from those various cultures are there already, as well as Caribbean and many other different African diaspora, you know, business or restaurants, you know. So what we actually did was look at Africa Town as an opportunity to bring a positive narrative to our community and focus on the assets. You know, our communities, just nationally and even internationally, are usually defined from a negative deficit perspective. You know, a dark place, a ghetto, somewhere. Regardless of the fact that it's producing so much riches, you know, even under the pressures, it's not looked at as a positive, you know, asset to the larger, you know, community or planet. And so we just looked at putting a positive narrative and actually curating those assets, because there was no way to experience and know those things were even there, even though they were sitting. So we look at it, you know, we created our, you know, Africa Town Hidden Treasures Tour. So Hidden Treasures of the Black Experience. And so at the time when we really lifted, you know, it up with that banner, there really was no vision for the future of the Black community in Seattle, right? People were, you know, seeing what was happening as far as the displacement, but there was no forward, you know, vision. And what do our communities become in the 21st century? What are our communities in the 21st century? So we looked at it as a opportunity to define for ourselves what our future could be, and use the best of our history here in Seattle, as well as around the nation and globally, as our reference point. So we just looked at what would it be like to have a place, a neighborhood, a community that was built on the best in our beauty and our brilliance. So what is it like to have some of the best? What does Philadelphia look like in Seattle? A piece of Black Philadelphia experience. You know, actually, the first church here is the first African Methodist Episcopal. So that's First AME was the first Black church established in the Black community in Seattle, one of the oldest institutions. So that African presence was here. So we just have to highlight some of those things. What does Motown look like in Seattle? What does the Harlem Renaissance look like? What does Timbuktu, our educational traditions from Kemet or Egypt, what does that look like? What does our Caribbean presence look like? You know, when we think about Marcus Garvey, when we look at our Afro-Brazilian presence, when we look at all of the positive, rich assets that we have, how do those become the foundation for what we build, you know, in the future, whether it's education, economics, and we have examples of our Black Wall Streets, of Mansa Musa. So we have all of these things within us already. How do we use those intentionally as a roadmap to build communities for ourselves into the future? So that's really what we did. And so that, though some, you know, obviously some of our Black people may not directly identify with Africa, you know, I think we help bridge the gap through education and putting things in context, as well as the fact that when we think about the economy being global, how do we interact with the global economy through our own African diaspora connections, kind of? And so having those opportunities, I think, presents a great benefit. Just on an economic level, it makes more sense for our children to be able to think about having career or business opportunities across the globe, and not just be limited to, you know, what's available in Seattle or America with all the glass ceilings that have persisted, right?
You know, and I'm going to use this opportunity to get Brother Richard involved in the conversation, because Brother Richard is a big proponent on what you just stated. When you stated that it was no forward thinking about where our people were going in the Seattle area, they seen other communities doing things, gentrifying areas, but it was no forward thinking until you and some of the others stepped up and put plans together for your vision for our people and our babies. And I can see some of the plans here, and they're amazing. But Brother Richard, jump in here, because I know that you're a big proponent of people having plans, drawing a map and then following that map. Jump in here on this one, Brother Richard.
You know, I have to say, Brother Joaquin, I'm really honored and pleased that you in what you're saying and how you're putting together. And the thing that struck me was the point that you, which I think is powerful to this point, Elliot, about thinking, forward thinking, but still being connected to the past, about creating a narrative and how that narrative has to connect all these different points. How was that process for y'all? I mean, okay, you really kind of laid it out, And Brother Ellie was asking about the buy-in from other segments of the community. Was pulling that narrative together for you and the people involved difficult, or was it kind of just like laying there with the history itself and all you had to do was enunciate it, as you know, or not?
Yes, I think most of it is you know, put it in proper context. You know, people may be looking at things from one perspective. You may just have to help them see it for another perspective and see themselves in it, right? And so, again, when I spoke about many of our community who may not particularly identify as African, right, but they go to First AME Church, you know, and so just letting them understand that, you know, this is who you are already, and you identify with it in different ways. Has helped. I mean, I think the work that the overall information renaissance with hidden colors and a lot of work that other people are doing that are raising the awareness and also reconnecting us with those positive stories about, you know, our positive history and legacy from the Moors to many others is also helping. And so we're just striving to ground that in actual, you know, community development, right? And so it's not just remaining in an academic sense or a conceptual sense of who we are, but saying, but this is who we were, but this is who we are, and how do we take those same stories and regenerate them in our current context in modern times, right? So that's kind of been the work there.
And does it help that this here, the demographics, the population, everybody is in the same geographical area in order to be able to help in kind of navigating and pulling people together with their particular historical narrative? I hear you say that even with continental Africans, that sounded mostly a lot from East Africa, have developed. Communities in the same space. So you have the historically African-American community and then incoming continental African community. Does that help? Everybody's in the same space to assist in creating this kind of forward thinking, this narrative to say we can pull all this together.
Yes, and I think that also, there are those divisions that come, you know, tribalism, you know, that still exists, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people with the pressure that's on, people can see that if we don't work together, we won't have our individual things, right? So there is, we have collective interests. And so also with the generations that are going to school with each other, so there may be more division within the first generation that has arrived and, you know, they were indoctrinated that, you know, not to associate with, you know, Black Americans, and then Black Americans are given certain indoctrination about Africa, and these things keep us apart. But as the children go to school together, they begin to bridge those gaps organically, right? And so it becomes easier for them to see a common future to themselves, because as they're interacting with the forces that are adverse towards us, no one is asking, you know, where did your parents come from and which language do you speak, et cetera, right? So I think there's some a more sense of a common destiny. And, again, just focusing the energy on producing the things that we need in our community, the institutions, the economics, the education, the things that work in our best interest has been the focus. So just focusing on the positive possibilities.
And you know, Elliot, we're talking about this intergenerational development kind of thing, and it sounds like in your project in Africatown and you being that third generation, I kind of hear that there is some kind of intergenerational linkage, and which raises the question of amongst your peers, has this in assisting to kind of bring this into being? Is it enough of a grouping to make that happen? And how are the younger generation, you already mentioned about them going to school so they don't have the same kind of differences. How are they reacting to the development of your project?
Well, a lot of the energy has been from a younger demographic because we are, you know, my age, we are coming of age in terms of having responsibility for the future of our community, and we have children. So as, you know, again, the consistent negative experiences with, you know, so many of the educational institutions and economic, et cetera, make us have to work together to ensure a better future for our children. And so I think people are receptive. A lot of times there is feeling we have to do something, but we may not know what to do. And the Africa Town initiative or vision provides space for everyone really to have a positive input and outcome from the work. And so the younger generations, I think also the not only the global diaspora, but even the diaspora, you know, Seattle is a major tech center. And so those companies are bringing some of the brightest black minds from across the nation and the world into Seattle. And so we have also been intentional about working with incorporating and bringing a sense of community for those what they call transplants or who have migrated here for work recently, particularly in those tech sectors. And so that has added, you know, we really look at our development initiatives as you know, one to bring in our innovation and our brilliance that is definitely a part of our heritage and our legacy, and apply that to our forward community building efforts.
You know, I want to touch on that part of it, what you just stated, but let me go back. And you can correct me as I move forward. I think I saw in some of the published reports that the project is going to start breaking ground this year.
Our first project, which is the the Liberty Bank Building project, will break ground within the next couple months.
Okay. So, now, Brother Joaquin, you know, I looked at some of the plans, and I shared them with Brother Richard. You know, the Afrocentric or African concept designs on a lot of the buildings, buildings that are going to be put into the project, the business center, the hospital, the senior living center, the bed and breakfast, the greenhouse space area, the music and education center, the spiritual non-denominational worship center, the textile workshop, the international trade center, and the murals all around showing different African flags. You know, that gives a community a sense of pride, man. And what you're talking about, I mean, I can't say it again. I got to repeat it. That's a model for what can be done in a lot of these cities where it's more population, because I think you sent me the demographic of the Seattle metro area is about 200,000 blacks. But you have a lot of cities with a lot more than 200,000 blacks that people are standing around and mentally going back and forth with ideas, but not putting the ideas forth, not coming to an agreement to say, let's do this, because it's evident that you men and women came up with various ideas, but agreed on an approach and stayed with it to the point where the groundbreaking starts, the plans has already been written up. I mean, and the other part that you just shared with Brother Richard, the tech area with the young people. I looked at the video of the Black Dot Expo that was hosted out there that I know that you were a part of, the Black Dot 2016 Expo, and also the Hack the Central District. Talk about those two things, because you had young black. And these people were in the generation, what they call black millennials, that came out there with all types of inventions, all types of tech coding, and showing people how to code. I mean, talk about it.
Yes, sir. Yes. So, yeah, we know our people are brilliant people and have been, you know, throughout history. So we still are. And the Hack the CD and the Black Dot, the Hack the CD was initiated through the work of a brother by the name of David Harris, who was originally from actually Detroit, who came to Seattle to work at Microsoft. And we connected in 2014 and had shared visions around bringing innovation to our community, being connected with our diaspora. And he led out on the Hack the CD initiative. And that wanted to connect our community's DNA around innovation and entrepreneurship with the current, what they call innovation economy, the tech economy, which was disconnected because much of the displacement is happening is based on that economy, the growth from that economy, but our community has not participated, even though we've been right there next to it. And so we wanted to create a bridge with that and create space for our innovators and our entrepreneurs to get the latest thinking and strategies around business development. And so that initiative happened, started out with what they call a hackathon for 2 years, which brought together, you know, programmer, coders, designers, and people with ideas and generated a lot of ideas. And what we learned out of that is that a three-day event is great, but there needed to be a consistent place and community for that activity to continue to happen and be supported and people be connected with resources and knowledge. And so that's how the Black Dot was born as a co-working and incubator space for Black businesses, both to assist those that have been in the community for years to make sure that they can stay into the future, as well as to launch and grow new ventures, you know, local community-based businesses, as well as what they call high-growth opportunities, like the tech companies, like the next, you know, Twitter or Facebook, so that's where that work comes from. So just bringing innovation, that the brain power that's being used to power many of these companies that we work in, and using that to build our communities where we live and we face problems, and focusing on solving those problems.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Joaquin, when I seen the Black Dot, I have to say the first thing came to my mind was Richard King's whole concept of Black Dot with the pineal gland and the issue of melanin, a carbon-based, and the whole thing of information. So I thought it was symbolic and informative on a lot of levels to call this, activity Black Dot. And that it dealt with information in the information age. So I thought that was creative, intentionally or not. It still is something that will be holding.
Yes, sir. We definitely connect to that. You know, that concept. You know, of activating our pineal glands to solve the problems that we face in this day and time, and also connecting us as dots and making sure that we remain on the map too. So, and connecting, you know, people and places, and I feel like we're connecting the dots right now across the cyberspace and across the country. So, yeah, there's many different meanings that are wrapped up, you know, within the idea of the Black Dot and the seed that produces more.
You know, go ahead, Richard.
If I can, mm-hmm. I just have to, you know, because I believe Washington and Minnesota, and it was the relationship to what you said about, you know, the how the information pool of Google as a large company was one of the reasons why the judge put a halt on this national ban of immigrants, because that was cutting into the human technology, human capital that those companies need, because they rely on a lot of people of high tech skills coming from different countries. So it's to hear that you that y'all have been able to tap in like-minded individuals and make that bridge with again the community itself, and how that can, you could see this here linkages again, is also exciting. So
Y'all are not only a Elliot, they're not only a model, but they're like right, you know, as they say, the epic center is in my excitement right now and hearing Brother Joaquin and what they're doing, thinking for the vision, doing the community development, placing it in the cultural context. It's looking towards, and I say 22nd century, but looking towards that 21st century rollout is it's just exciting, and it makes me feel bad here in Philadelphia haven't even got there yet.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna mix some of that into our conversation, Richard, because I think it's important to look at other cities and what's being done and what's not being done, because all of these things are a learning process for us. Brother Joaquin, you mentioned, and I kind of spoke with Brother Richard in just a conversation, and you kind of confirmed it, that what you guys are doing has become a pipeline for young tech savvy individuals to start migrating towards the Seattle area. And I can see that they already have input in what you're doing, because I saw some of the plans drew up, and you don't get people that don't know about building and engineering to draw up a lot of those plans. I mean, I see what you guys have been doing. It's obvious. It's on paper. So I just wanted you to kind of confirm that that this can be a conduit for a lot of our young black professionals to say, listen, we can go to Seattle area. We can make an impact. They can make an impact nationally in black communities nationwide and worldwide in what you guys are doing out there.
Yeah, and I'll speak to that briefly. And I just regarding the, and this, I do want to stress that this is very intergenerational work. The designs that you are looking at, which are concepts for a future project, were actually developed by esteemed architecture professor Dr. Sharon Sutton, who was at the University of Washington at the time. And they ran a studio on the campus to bring forth what African-centered design, are there principles that are different? And they actually did find, as you may have saw in the document, that there are some principles that relate to how we live and then how the built environment can reflect that, right? And we know that a lot of, at least coming to the north for sure, we came into communities that were already built. And so we did not get to envision, what a community would be like if it was built to facilitate our best, you know, our highest and best aspirations. And so we are really appreciate the work of many that came before us, as well as our elders such as Dr. Sharon Sutton, who was given this opportunity to bring their wisdom and experience and allow our younger energy to combine and produce a better future. And speaking to the diaspora piece, yes, we have, been intentional about connecting with those that are working in those companies, as well as bringing people in. Like our Hack the City this year actually featured entrepreneurs and innovators from Haiti, Ethiopia, Liberia, who participated either by flying in or via technology through video conferencing to pitch their ideas, and were actually able to get resources and make relationships that could benefit the projects that they are working on in their particular respective parts of the diaspora. And so that is happening. We look forward to more of that, so it's not that a person even has to relocate permanently. I mean, 1 week we can work and have input and connections, or if a person spends a number of years, or if they make their family or their future here, there's many levels to plug in. And so even right now, for some of, we've had a issue of finding black contractors to work on some of the projects, because so many of the contractors have gone out of business. Mm-hmm. So now we are going to be looking to source black, general contractors and talent nationwide. So that's going to create other opportunities. There's more cranes in Seattle right now, I think, than anywhere else in the country, right? So there is a building boom being driven by, the economic growth. And there's opportunities for our community to participate and have a part in that and create jobs. And we are not limited to just working with people who are here. So that is another aspect that we can be doing trade culturally, information and ideas, as well as economics across geographic boundaries. There are no boundaries now except in our minds. So we want to break those down and really get to unleashing our potential.
Wow, Brother Richard. I mean, this is wow. It's a blueprint, man. It's a blueprint, Richard.
And you know, Brother Wyking, what you sparked there, because and eventually, hopefully, we'll get to the dialogue, because I like to see how the opposition was, as you're now at a different place in relationship to things are happening, and I take it was a process. And I wonder, could you kind of, if you can briefly, like, lay out over the beginning to how did you get to this point, and what benchmarks you had to address, if they weren't many, to get to this point where you, and the way you're communicating and what we see, you're actually now in the implementation stage, from the concept to the implementation.
Richard, do me a favor. Let me set it up like this, because I'm going to give an example that we kind of know of, mm-hmm. and throw it at Brother Wyking in relation to the question you just asked. Brother Wyking, in 2006, if I'm not mistaken on the date, because Professor James Klingman is going to join us in the second hour, in 2006, an idea that was a conglomeration of men and women involved, Professor James Klingman, Dr. Claude Anderson, Rosie Milligan, Brother Amafika Gayuka, Bob Law, several prominent black economists and activists and community builders, to use your phrase, went to Detroit to pitch an idea, being that Detroit was 83% black and all the power brokers and elected officials were black, went there to pitch an idea. The idea was what you're talking about, an Africatown project, but doing it in Detroit. And a couple of black lawmakers went along with it, but the idea was shot down. You didn't approach it from that way, from what I understood from you and conversations that we had off the air. Tell our listening audience how you men and women approached it.
Yes. That's a great question. So we did follow the Detroit, followed the Detroit process. And Detroit is Africatown already. I mean, this is what we say. Harlem is Africatown. You know, Watts is Africatown. You know, the Africatowns already exist. We don't have a unified brand.
Okay.
We are the same people everywhere we are. So our approach and the original Africatown identify as in Alabama, you know, just outside of Mobile. And that was established many, many years ago by Africans who were free in that area. So we just took a self-determined approach and said, this is who we, I mean, no one else has we have the right to name ourselves. That's one of the principles of self-determination of Kuti Tagalia. And so we just said it makes more sense for us to be identified. We look at Chinatown everywhere, every community outside of Chinese outside of China is default recognized as Chinatown, right? And there's no real issue with that. It makes sense. And so we kind of just took that same approach presented it, you know, with a positive narrative, positive imagery, you know, as far as the brand and the story that really is very logical, right? And so we began to build and do the work, and the system, it's hard for them to respond. You know, as they say, where there is no vision, the people perish. And so when we see our community, you know, being displaced in the way that it is, we have to ask, well, what is the strategic vision or the strategic plan for this community? What is the 20 to 30 year plan? And so many times we're just striving to survive and pay the bills for the next 30 days that, you know, we're not focused. So when we arrive, someone else already has a plan and has everything accounted for again. And for whatever reasons, our leadership had not put forth a vision for our community development past, I guess, integration or, you know, disintegration of our communities. And so we just were, I would say, self-determined and outworking, you know, anyone else that was, you know, just seeking to have some grants or funding for a program or, you know, things like that, jobs initiative. You know, it's like, what is our actual community, comprehensive community development initiative that covers everything from our education to our business development to our health and well-being and all in our cultural aspect, the same way the city is planning it for itself. I mean, the rest of the city and everyone else that has plans, why should we not have plans? I think Marcus Garvey said that if they have men of high affairs and things and we don't have any, then we create our own. So we created a vision for ourselves and wrote ourselves into the future of the city where they had maybe wrote us out of the script. So
what you're saying, Brother White King, is because we know that, and I'm quite sure Seattle's no different. In fact, I know Seattle's no different, that the powers that be or the society that we live in, functioning in white supremacy, wants to gentrify all these areas. So they had a gentrifying plan for the Central District. But you're saying that the community, a unified community, went to officials and said, this is our plan for the community. Is that what you're... Okay, go ahead.
I mean, we went to ourselves, you know, first and began to, you know, name things and make, you know, our events and align our own assets within the context and then presented it and then challenged others. You know, I mean, we have serious NGOs here, such as the you know, the Gates Foundation, which and others that are doing significant work to so-called improve Africa. And, you know, our question is, well, what about the African 15 minutes away from the headquarters, you know? Because, you know, if what's happening to us is the model, then we got to disrupt that model because that's not going to work for our people worldwide. And so, you know, we you know, put the challenge out and put the vision out, and some people responded to the vision, and some people just had to get rolled over by the vision. And so I think where there's a big, strong vision and people that are really that are willing to work to bring it to reality, that is something that's very can create a great amount of momentum. We really had our heads down working, and so now that we're doing, you know, these type of calls that are across the airways and across the country, we probably experience and things are happening. We expect that there probably will be more obstacles or opposition that may develop, but we are accounted for.
Okay. That, so. Well, yeah. Well, I know you men and women are prepared for the pushback. I know you are.
Let's be calling out to our brothers in Philly and everywhere else. So that's another thing. Seattle has put out an image. I was talking to a brother who's doing good work right there in Pittsburgh, actually, around community development, Brother Majestic Lane. And, you know, he was telling me about he goes to conferences, and everywhere he goes, he hears that Seattle is the model. And so
wow,
they have
okay.
a great market in that. And they're saying, well, our community is being decimated. So they've been putting certain things on paper and saying certain things. And so that's another big part is we're just holding them accountable to the things that they're saying around shared social justice and equitable development and shared prosperity, because these are things that you hear every day. But then when you look at the material reality, there's a disconnection. So we're just striving to make it one or the other. Either we're going to be this or we're going to be no different than Mississippi or whatever other place they may look down on and say is not progressive. So that is another thing, is that we have challenged those who have said that they are allies and progressive and liberal to say, well, where's our peace?
Okay.
Where's our equity in this?
How are you rallying to support us in this effort? I hear you. Does this help in the political organizing? Because that was one of the questions that I had. The question about when we talk about opposition, and because of the project that you're and the visioning and the buy-in that you have from the community, the intergenerational community that you're engaged in, does this help in the political organizing of the community?
We have engaged in the electoral politics on a local level. I have run for office in our area. I actually ran for mayor in 2009 to elevate our platform and agenda. And in the last election, we had all of the city council members, candidates, actually say they were affirmed, they were supportive of the Africa Town concept. And so we hold candidate forums, and we make sure that we're focused on an actual agenda, not just hearing them and seeing them, you know, during election, but here's what we're striving to move forward. So we do engage.
And has that been responsive from the community at large in relationship to assisting in, I guess, in the voting or the voting compared to balloting process, as far as being helpful to making sure that those people realize that y'all are serious? voting involvement increase, or are the voters actually in the central district? Are they actually engaged in assisting you by?
Well, we had to get rid of one mayor, and then the next mayor that came in, and he said he was supportive of Africa Town and then didn't deliver, so then we had to get rid of him.
Oh, so
now we're on the third mayor, and this mayor has been much more moving things forward in a much more effective manner. So I would say that there is that level of power is being used.
Okay.
And, you know, that pressure has to come from a unified community. So, Brother Wyking, hats off to you and people involved in the organization to force some of our elected officials to at least take a stand. You know, some of our elected officials, citywide, statewide, and even nationally, when you go to them about issues that affect our community directly, the first thing they say, well, I represent all people. I can't speak just on black issues. But at least you got the people, the black elected officials that are running for office there, to at least come out publicly and saying that they're for the Africa Town project. So,
I wasn't referring to just black elected officials.
Okay, yeah, I understand. No, yeah, because I heard you mention about the mayor and others, but I'm just talking about
all of them.
Yeah, but yeah. That came from pressure from the community, though.
Yeah, we've had a struggle with our black elected officials.
Okay.
The gentrification and things happened. We had a black mayor when it was all set in motion. So we our black elected officials haven't had a vision for us. They kind of left us out to dry. So hopefully they will, use whatever capital that they have, still to be supportive of the young people actually having a future, because they didn't pass down a lot to us. A lot of the institutions that were generated out of the work of the, 60s and whatnot and the 70s have been nullified almost, and so we're trying to recover our assets and our institutions and preserve what we have and build the ones for the future. So hopefully they will at least be supportive of that and not be obstacles.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation. And sometime in the second hour, we'll be joined by Professor James Klingman. We're in conversation tonight with Brother Y. King Garrett, a community builder, a founder, director of the Emoja Peace Center, and chief strategist for the Africatown Seattle Community Development Initiative. It's an exciting project. You heard Brother Y. King said there'll be great breaking ground within the next couple of months. You can go online and see a lot of some of the things that they've been doing. Some of the project, the buildings that are proposed includes a business center, a hospital, a senior living center, a bed and breakfast, greenhouse spaces, a music education center, a spiritual non-denomination worship center, a textile workshop, international trade center, African flags as murals on the buildings. It's a great undertaking. It'll bring great pride to Seattle. As Brother Y. King stated, several young black tech entrepreneurs has already been coming to Seattle. They have other international blacks from the continent that's adding expertise. So the intellectual input is coming, and it's been coming to Seattle in reference to what these men and women are doing. And I want you to join in the conversation tonight with Brother Y. King Garrett. You know, we have a brother here in Philadelphia that's doing something similar, that has a black marketplace in the southwest section of Philadelphia, a 10-block square marketplace. Hopefully Brother Sabor Muhammad is out there listening and joining the call this evening. But you can get involved in the conversation at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back with our guest, Brother Y. King Garrett. We'll be right back. Moderator. You know what? We're not exactly ready to go to break yet. Let's take one call, and I see that Professor Klingman is going to join us, but I'll take one call before this break. Let's get a call in here. 215 area code, what's your name? Where are you calling from? 215 area code, what's your name? Where are you calling from? 215? We'll put the call, maybe they stepped away. We'll put the caller back on hold. We're going to take a break, and we'll be all set now. And you can join the conversation, too, at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back with Brother Y. King Garrett.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
No, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? You realize that nobody's going to save black people but us if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective. If you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost. If you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com. From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. Live streaming podcasts and broadcasts at timeforanawakening.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined this evening by a special guest out of Seattle, Washington, community builder, founder and director of Umoja Peace Center, and the chief strategist for the Africa Town Seattle Community Development Initiative. Brother Y. King Garrett is with us this evening. You can join this conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Also, another special guest that has joined us on the line, author, businessman, and a strong advocate for economic empowerment for African Americans through his weekly columns and his website, Blackonomics. Professor James Klingman has joined us. Professor Klingman.
How you doing, Elliot?
How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. I'm here with Brother Richard with us and Brother Y. King Garrett.
Hey, Brother doing? Richard.
How you doing now?
And Brother Y. King.
Dr. Klingman, Professor Klingman, listen, I want to get you involved in the conversation because before we went to break, I told Brother Y. King about what you guys had done, yourself, Dr. Claude Anderson, Bob Law, Brother Amafika Gayuka, Rosie Milligan, when you went to Detroit and pitched an Africatown project in Detroit. Brother Y. King took a different approach in Seattle. His approach seemed to be working very well. I shared with you some of the information. I know that you probably looked it over. But I just want you to get involved in the conversation. Brother Y. King is, as he calls himself, a third-generation community builder. His grandfather had the first black bank on the West Coast. So you can see that he comes from strong stock. But talk about it from your perspective and his accomplishments of what he has accomplished in Seattle.
Well, first of all, let me congratulate him because as I listened to him the first hour, it reminded me of something I said years ago when I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, doing a series of workshops. And the brother drove me around to different places, all black, of course, and showed me, you know, restaurants and all that. And we were on this street called Pontiac Street. I guess it's the main street that runs through where black people live. And he said, man, you know what? This street named Pontiac is named after an Indian. And it shouldn't be, you know, that kind of name in the black community. And I said, well, why don't you just change it? Oh, we have to go to City Hall. I said, no, you don't. All you do is call it what you want it to be. And you work with your people around identifying yourself and where you live. And you make it happen because you are there in that particular neighborhood and community. And when I heard Brother Y. King talking about how they determine among themselves that we're already in Africatown. All we have to do is rally our people and take advantage of the resources that we already have here, the history as well as the present. And I agree, that's the way to do it, because it is about self-determination. It is about the fact that you live where you live, and you're the only group that lives there, so it's about taking the pride and the resources and building, you know, building out that community the way you think it should be as far as being a resource for you and your family and your children. So I highly agree. One thing I would point out that on my website is my latest article. I'm writing 4 articles this month on making black history, telling black people, look, Amos Wilson told us, you know, we're good at celebrating somebody else's pyramids, but we're not good at building our own. And this week's article talks about a little-known place and a little-known name in our recent history who set out to build a black town in 1972 or so, Floyd McKissick, down in North Carolina. He started a place called Soul City. And I thought about that as well when I listened to Brother Y. King, and I said, well, the main thing is to start out strong. And what I mean by that is you start out controlling the land. land is the most important thing in this country. And what I heard and what I read about the Seattle Africatown Project, they were already there. They had history there. They had roots there. They put money into that community. They already had it, and I'm sure some black people own major parts of that land. So that's where you start. It starts with ownership. And in this article that I wrote for next week's paper, I said we have to buy our land where we live. We have to build on it. We have to develop it and claim it for ourselves, just like the Chinese people, the Greek people, the Italian people, and every other group in this country. So I'll stop there and just say that I admire what they're doing out there with 8% of the population. Shows that it can and should be done. And anything I can do to help create awareness around Africatown in Seattle, I'm happy to do. I don't know if Brother White King has read my column. I know they carry it in the Seattle Medium, so he can check that out. And like I said, I'm here to help promote it.
Well, yes, I definitely appreciate that. And I have grown up following your column in the in the Seattle Medium. And so the work that you've done and the groundwork and the concepts that yourself and Claude Anderson and many others, we're just striving to make it work in our area. And if we can determine some models and have some learning that can benefit our communities elsewhere, then that's great. We have experienced a great loss of our demographic in the Central District to the southern areas, South King County. But even in going there, we're going as refugees. There's not a community development plan for when we get there. We're just going where we can pitch a tent. So hopefully what we're striving to do is get some basic community building blocks so wherever we go, we know how to set up a community. You know, what do we establish first? How do we do these things? What type of events? You know, those kind of things. So I appreciate the opportunity to be in, you know, to be in dialogue with you and to strive to take some of the learning and principles that yourself and Blackonomics and Powernomics and, you know, Amos Wilson and so many others, Dr. Bobby Wright and Marcus Gray and everyone, you know, and Taj Mahal, you know, it's nothing new. We're just striving to redo
it
based on where we are right now.
That's exactly right, and I appreciate that. And one note, Elliot, about the politics of it all. You talked about Detroit that had a black mayor who was supposedly conscious and Afrocentric. But he came out against that project in 2005, calling it divisive and separatist. One of the black councilwomen said that it was racist and would make Detroit look silly. It would be an embarrassment for Detroit. So it didn't work. And that just opened my eyes and to see how futile it is in most cases to start going after a politician to make something like that happen, black or white. But I'm glad to see that Brother White King has some cooperation and some assistance out there in Seattle, because Floyd McKissick had some political assistance in 72 from the Nixon administration to build Soul City. And after about 6 years, it was declared economically unviable for some reason. And it was really because they didn't have enough money. They had the land, but they didn't have enough money to finish the development. Even though people still live there today, it's not what Floyd McKissick dreamed about having. So I'm excited about learning more and seeing more on the Seattle Africatown. And like you said, Elliot, it could be a model. It is a model for cities across this country. Gary, Indiana, for instance, economic enclave that used to be in our, you know, in the United States. We had Bronzeville, we had Black Bottom, we had Sweet Harbor, and I could go on and name those. And we have to reclaim them and do what the young brother just said, rebuild, renew, because it's all been done before.
Yes.
I think just with that, that's one of the things that we've looked at, too, is that there hasn't been a unifying brand around our places, right? And so, like you said, you Bronzeville here and Watts here and Harlem there. And then, you know, as they change, like we're the Central District. That is a geographical designation. So whoever's there is Central District, right? They're in the right. Central District. But if you go to Chinatown and you don't see Chinese people, then you're going to think something's wrong. And so that's another reason why we see the, you know, actually lifting up and claiming our, putting our cultural designation on it gives us, first off, it makes us global and within the economic sense. But it also grounds us a little further. It's a little harder to peel us off, you know, because they're already trying to kind of rename certain parts of the community.
Right, right.
So we just up the ante on them.
You know,
well, that was my example, I'm sorry, about the Fort Wayne. He who defines you controls you. Everybody wants to name us, wants to tell us who we are. They want to give us these little euphemistic, innocuous names like, well, you're a minority. You're a person of color. And everything except they won't use Africa. They won't use people of African descent. So you have to define yourself. And I see you doing that with your project there in Seattle.
One thing you brought up, Bob, a claim in that, and that I like to ask you, Joaquin, that is like very also important. Land is important. But the question about money, and I'm thinking about investment dollars. And Brother Joaquin, you raised the point that in your visioning, in your strategic visioning, you looked at the things that needed to, the resources that needed. How do you incorporate the investment process to where money can be able to be flowed in, whether it is to support the development of Africatown.
That's an excellent question. So one of the aspects is again, it doesn't take a lot of money to rename what you already have, right? It just changing some words. So that was the first thing. What do we already have? You know, we have a lot of land owned and potentially with the potential to be redeveloped by the churches in our community. There are private homeowners and things of that nature and some organizations and businesses. So that was the first step. And for new development, there are developments that are going to happen there's dollars that are earmarked to do things in our community. And so that was another thing, is getting control over that, and how is that, and other people that are saying they're doing things in our name or they're collecting resources to do things in, say, nonprofit housing development, et cetera, and making sure that it fits within the context of our community development vision rather than just being imposed on us. And then the next step is actually putting mechanisms for us to have the investment from our local community, but then also opening that up to the national and international community when we think about the power of crowdsourcing now. You know, there's
right.
opportunities, not before we even get to the financial capital, just intellectual capital. So when we're thinking about our Afrocentric design principles, we want to source from all of the designers and architects from the diaspora. They can help us design Africatown. So not, you know, using the technology platforms to leverage, you know, leverage as well. I mean, we're now in an age where you have largest transportation company that doesn't own a car, such as Uber, or largest, you know, hotel that doesn't own a building, such as Airbnb. And so how do we begin to incorporate these same type of solutions, leveraging communication capacity through technology for our own community development, development of solutions to our problems in our community? So those are two things. So just the idea that we can be in communication and we can have the benefit of Dr. Klingman and Dr. Anderson and everyone else who's already has experience and has done research, and then we just focus it on this particular area for this particular time, and then we can go to the next area and so on and so forth. So I hope that answers the question. But we do think I think the Bank Black movement also will open up, you know, opportunities as well when we think about, okay, as we bank black, how do those resources then come back into our community for business and housing development, et cetera?
And the reason why I kind of raise that is because as I look at 1 million conscious black voters and contributors and Baba Klayman as one of the economic forerunners in developing that movement and organizational development. One thing is to look at areas such as these, I'm assuming, and help me out, Baba Klayman, if I'm incorrect, and say, oh, well, here is possible where we as a community, no matter where we are, and Brother, why can't you bring up a possible mechanism, say crowdfunding, we could invest in this community, and it becomes a development, an investment prospect for those of us who may not live there, and it becomes a funding source to continue to develop your projects for those who do live there. Because I believe we did lose the opportunity, and Baba Klayman, you raised the point about Soul Town, Soul City. We lost the opportunity to be able to be all over the country, invest in and have the money, the capital to assist in that. We lost the opportunity after Katrina, in my opinion, to be able to assist in the development of that. And the same thing with Detroit, not necessarily from the political part, but here now from the capital formation part. So the question of having those instruments where we can be able to say, here is an investment opportunity, and it develops a community, but we don't necessarily have to be there. I think that's what I was trying to, and you did answer it, trying to drive and reinforce that how we can be able to marshal to assist in projects like that and show it can be done, duplicated. We don't need, nonprofit funding, because we can fund it ourselves by being able to direct it to really reasonable community development projects.
Let me add a couple of more layers to that for Brother White King.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Richard just identified, points out the importance and the relevance of the 1 million. We had a young brother who came to our last T&O, Elliot and Richard, in Beaumont, named Rashawn Everett. But he came with one of our members, Brother John Brown, who is a real estate developer, CPA, and financial expert. So John has taken Rashawn under his wing. But Rashawn started something called the Greenwood Project. And it is an investment project through the crowdfunding model based upon the SEC rules and this law that was recently passed where people can invest in, you know, who have less than $1 million net worth, can invest in these kinds of projects. So I really want to talk to you. I just found the link between you and myself, Brother White King, and that's it. I want you to talk with John Brown and Rashawn Everett about, and you can go to the website before you do it. It's called thegreenwoodproject.org. And check it out. And let's
It's funny. I went to the Afrotech conference that was in San Francisco in November and met Brother Rahsaan there. We talked,
Man.
We were on the same wave with the
right.
crowdfunding from the Jobs Act opens up a lot of opportunities for our community. We just have to make sure we build the structures right, because as soon as one little thing is off,
our
community
has
a tendency to throw their hands up. So
that's the value of having an experienced brother like John Brown. He's been doing this for over 30 years. And I'm telling you, he is expert at what he does. And he is mentoring Rahsaan to make sure all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed. And both of them are members of the 1 million. And as Richard alluded to, we have people in 42 states who are looking at investing in Rahsaan's Greenwood project. Now, this money will go into escrow, and then once they hit the deadline for investing in May, they'll begin to decide where they're going to invest the money. And certainly Africatown businesses in Seattle could be on that list.
Yeah, I think that's – I don't think money is our issue, actually. It's our mindset. I mean, we have so much money here. So we're just trying to have a cultural shift, One of the powerful things when I visited the museum and it showed some of the black towns, it spoke about they would go and recruit people that were industrious and of good character, like Whitefield, New Jersey, and different places. And so it's the same – really kind of ideas, getting a culture of being industrious and productive and thinking about solving our problems, where we kind of have been, I think, separated from that mindset for the last maybe 40 or 50 years.
You know, Brother Wah-King and Brother Klingman, I just want to throw this in. Brother Wah-King, the Africatown project is going to break ground this year in a couple of months, but through your work, and also the work of the other organization, I just ran across the name Centerstone.
Yes. So
your work at Liberty. Go ahead.
The Liberty Bank building project is a partnership with a community based organizations, Africatown, Centerstone, which is. Black Community Impact Alliance and a nonprofit developer, which is called Capitol Hill Housing in Seattle. And people can see more information about that at the libertybankbuilding.org. And what we did was structure an MOU so that the community, maybe not having the capacity today to do the full development, has the opportunity to acquire the project in totality over in time.
Yeah, I see that. I saw that.
Yeah, so
the agreements that was reached.
And that was kind of, at least for this area, a new paradigm, because, again, most people are doing for us and benefiting. We are on the brochures, and our stories are being told at these fundraising breakfasts, but we're not really participating in the, equity participants and not participating in the real economic opportunity. So we wanted to change our relationship, redefine how we interact with government and nonprofits, regarding our solutions to our issues.
Yeah, because I was reading over those eight elements that came to an agreement with the city of Seattle and the contractor to provide affordable commercial space for African-American businesses at minimum leasing criteria, to develop and support black-owned businesses. Capitol Hill funding will commit a certain amount of dollars for 3 years to help establish business innovations and support black businesses. The project partnership will ensure that the building, both design and others, will be in the history of the Liberty Bank and represent the African-American design sensibility, to prioritize local and minority or black hiring, identify black-owned subcontractors. You got several guarantees here that were signed at the table that it was a lot of work you men are doing out there. That's a model for what can be done in other cities, man. I that's why I wanted to connect the dots, get Brother Klingman on here, and it just so happens that the young man, Rashawn, you've already met him. So the dots have been connected already. Let's get a couple callers in here. Let's go to the DMV. I got a special guest joining us here. Sister, are you on the line?
I am. Hi, Brother Elliot.
It sounds like the sister, the Taki Kambon of Let's Buy Black365.com. Is this her?
It is. How are you?
Great. I don't know how much you've heard, Sister Nataki, but we have Brother Y. King Garrett of the Seattle Africatown Project in Seattle. And if you get a chance, look online about what the brothers and sisters are doing out there and this amazing work. And, I see that you called, so I know that you want to throw something into the mix.
Yeah, definitely. I've been listening to the whole show and hearing everything that's going on. Very, very excited. Wanted to also connect the brother with some resources. And coming out of the State of the Black World Conference, there's been talk of building a model in Newark, New Jersey, and Mayor Baraka has been very open to that. So definitely want to connect some resources there. But really, really excited to hear about the project. And as we have been talking internally within Let's Buy Black 365 about crowdfunding small business operations, would just love to have that kind of dialogue. So. Thank you so much for having this platform, Elliot. This show is always an incredible resource for community, and just always really excited to hear about everything that your guests are doing and how you find these people and make them available to community is really amazing.
Well, I thank you for what you're doing, Sister Nataki, with the work with Let's Buy Black365.com and connecting the dots with Brother Klingman. Your work speaks for itself. So what I'll do, I'll give Brother Y. King your contact where he can reach you and you can kind of dialogue with him about Newark and Mayor Baraka.
You know, I'm thinking of the brother in Mississippi that ran for mayor spoke at the, and I can't think, his father, no, his father wasn't there.
Oh, you're talking about Chuck Lumumba.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's when you mentioned Sister Nataki about Newark, that seemed like another area that Brother Y. King, that your project, because it seems, and what I'm excited about is that y'all are, when I say y'all, I'm looking at a generational thrust, right? And I've been seeing this, and I'm really excited about this, Bobby King Klingman. I think that that this is a moment, right, where people are actually a certain generation are actually clear of how to go about community, national and international development,
mm-hmm.
Pulling these systems together, and are clear about what the opposition is, so how we need to go about it. So. When I hear when you mentioned that, Sister Kamon, that made me think that's another area that Brother Y. King, that your model, and they have one. They have a model too. But the collaboration of cities and their models is another learning point for us all,
exactly.
In a relationship to make this thing to make us stronger. Because there's opportunities here. You hear me say opportunities.
Right.
Everybody can't do everything, but everybody can be supportive to everyone. We just got to figure out how to happen, and that comes through having the vehicle of communication. So that's
absolutely. Another interesting thing, I went to school in Newark, so I went to New Jersey Institute of Technology, so I stayed kind of plugged in with some of my brothers that went to school that I have worked with, you know, with Ross, my brother Nasir Gibson, who is there at Central High running the engineering program, and he's come out to Seattle and seen what we're doing. And
wow.
So this is beautiful how these connections then come together. And then we work with Chokwe, too. Shokwe came up and spoke when he was still a city council, running for city council, and he was a grand marshal of our African Town Heritage Parade.
Wow, this is amazing.
And became mayor. So we've been following Cooperative Jackson and have had exchange there, too. So this is it's interesting how it all comes together.
I was going to say, if I could throw out one other concept, about a year ago, I think this week, we did an initiative. We have a crowdfunding platform, and we did an initiative for Flint, Michigan, and where we use Black resources to get supplies and water to the residents there. And in talking with the residents, one of the things that became very apparent is they weren't communicating with other cities to know when things were happening, successes, and problems. They weren't relying on each other. And so, you know, even if one city's doing one model, another city's doing another model, this is also, like you said, an opportunity where things can be communicated so that you have this synergistic activity and that we're not siloed communities, Black communities around the country. We're all interconnected. So it's fantastic. I'm really excited.
That's right, sister. That was a powerful initiative to get those resources to Flint. So I definitely applaud you for and all those that helped, that made that happen. That was wonderful.
Sister Taki, I want to thank you for your call.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Elliot.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that, again, I can't emphasize enough, since we're talking about connecting and networking, I can't emphasize enough the fact that we have people in 42 different states. We are connecting or making efforts every day to get people to step up in states that don't have them to be state organizers and then conduct their meetings and then conduct meetings in different cities in their states. So we'll all know what's going on and we won't be in our silos. But the emphasis has to be on doing one thing. I think Brother Joaquin said that. We have to do one thing first. And I know we can walk and chew gum at the same time, and this is not an either-or scenario I'm painting. I'm saying let's do one thing and show folks what can be done all over this country. We need a model. Too bad it wasn't Detroit. But if Brother Y. King is further along the path on this, then let's support him nationwide, get it done, and move on to the next one. And then we'll, eventually get to a point where we can do two or three at once. The crowdfunding law is that the opportunity to invest expires in May. We're trying to raise $1 million. That money could be used to do some of the things we're talking about. So, Brother Joaquin, again, I would just say that, first of all, I didn't see your list on the one, I mean, your name on my state list for Washington. We only have 10 members in the 1 million from Washington. So here's the order. I'm going to ask for the order. First of all, I'm going to ask you to go and look and consider being our state organizer. I don't know if you even have the time to do it, but there's no harm in asking. And then I'd like for you to spread the word out there to your 8% Black folks, probably 2% of whom are conscious, and ask them if they would go to our website. If they want to join, that's fine. If they don't, no problem. But we have to maximize our intellectual resources as well as our financial resources, bring our people together, because the national template that we have developed in the 1 million also works both economically and politically on a local level. So we have to use what we have, do something that will be the model for, further development to come. and we'll be well on our way to leaving a legacy here for our children to see and know that we actually did exist in the United States.
Let me grab, I got a call or two on hold. Let me try to grab them in here before we wind the program down. 646 area code, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Jay. How you doing, Brother Elliot? And to your guests, right quick, I'd just like to know, are you getting support from the politicians in your city? And also, are the athletes that, you know, out there in the Seattle area that grew up and, you know, had the opportunity to make it to the NFL, NBA, and, you know, other places abroad, are they assisting you in what you're trying to develop out there? Because it sounds like it's something that, you know, they should have done in Detroit. You know, maybe that could have saved Kwame Kilpatrick in Detroit from what happened to him.
Thank you for the question. The politicians, I think we are getting some support. When it's done and you can come to the buildings and see, to me that's the ultimate, you know, test. But we have gotten, you know, support in certain things and in word, and so now we're moving it forward to the next stage where the appropriations actually happen to get things done, and it looks like we have support there too. As far as our athletes, we've really been doing the groundwork to make it an easy process for them, you know. And so we are now in the phase of, now that we have specific projects and opportunities that we can package and present, we are now in the stages of rolling that out. There are some such as like Nate Robinson, who already has businesses in the community with his Nate's Wings and Waffles. And so
he's from that area.
Going, yeah, Nate Robinson. Many. We have. For our NBA, we're looking at our NBA output as our goal for our economic community development output.
Okay.
Because we have,
that's good.
You know, Jamal Crawford and Nate Robinson and Isaiah Thomas, and there's a lot of them out there. So,
good. All right.
We want to have that same excellence that we've been having in sports and in basketball. In community economic development.
Good.
They set a high mark for us.
Well, that's great to hear that hopefully them brothers will join you economically, and you'll be able to leverage even more of a strength position in Seattle. Is one last question. Is there a certain radius that your brothers are in? You know, because one of our biggest problems, I live here in Harlem, right? And, you know, I was saying the other day that the biggest employee of Harlem, which is supposed to be the mecca of Black America, is Sylvia's Restaurant. You know what I mean? Think about it. This is Harlem. The biggest employee of Black people in Harlem that's not white-owned is Sylvia's Restaurant. That's inexcusable. There's no way in hell we as a people should ever be in a position to where a restaurant is our biggest employee. We have to be in a position to manufacture something or to build something on the level to where, as if white folks make the decision that we don't want to deal with your Black asses no more, somebody can hire you. Somebody could take care of you. And I think that's something that hopefully, you know, we will get to the point to where we start to realize that. Because think about it. You're in the Black community. Honestly, if your association wasn't building any, projects in the Black community, how many of those businesses would be owned by us? How many of them will be sustained by us? And I just hope that when you do start hiring, you hire your own. Don't hire no Mexicans, no one else. Just hire Black people, because that's what white people do.
Jake, listen, I want to thank you for your call, man.
Hotep, brother.
Let's grab another caller here. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, it's Brother Marcus, a.k.a. Brother Devon from Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh. How are you, Marcus?
I'm doing fantastic, Black family. I like the talk today. And I would like you guys to connect the dots down here to in Memphis, you know, because, you know, Memphis is the second largest Black populated city, second to Detroit. And what's happening here in Memphis now is they're going to make that is a port city. That it's right along the Mississippi. They're bringing in the train. They're bringing in the barges coming, so it's a good trade site. And, you know, the land is extremely cheap down here. You see, the Shelby County Land Bank is selling land ridiculously cheap. They have lots available for $50, lots available $200. So this is a city that we could take over. You know, it's 63% Black already. But, you know, to get the Black folks down here to understand, you know, sometimes when you're here, you can't see, but you know, looking from a distance, you could see. So if you guys could, if we could put a program like that here in Memphis too, that would be fantastic. You know, but as the professor was talking about land ownership, that is something we should look here in Memphis, because they're selling out lots here ridiculously cheap. So, you know, we should take advantage of these opportunities as they present themselves. And thank you for the program.
Brother Marcus, thank you for your input.
You take care.
Let's go to 215 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? 215? 215. Maybe we lost that caller. You know... Brother Y. King, you know, before we leave and wind up the program this evening, talk a little bit about the Umoja Peace Center, because I see that was your first love before you got involved with the Africa Town Project. You know, the Heritage Festival, the parade, that's all involved in what you're doing, building pride among our people there in Seattle, which can develop into a national pride of what you're doing. But talk about the Umoja Peace Center and your involvement there as the founding director.
Sure. So the Peace Center was developed kind of in the aftermath of, I spoke before about my father being the founder of the African American Heritage Museum and Culture Center in Seattle, and that project was extended development in terms of the building had to be, was occupied and claimed for our community. And then finally the city and, you know, others, you know, realized that it had to come into existence. But at that point, it was kind of a bait and switch in terms of turning it into something other than what it was supposed to be. And really, that was supposed to be the anchor institution. And so in the wake of that institution being basically, you know, taken over and diverted from its focus around our community development, there was a property in the community that was a residential house that was what we call a self-medication facility that people weren't too happy with. So there was a lot of drug activity. And it was in the during the 2008 election, and Sister Cynthia McKinney was running for president, and Sister Rosa Clemente under the Green Party, and they wanted to have an office in the community, in the Central District, in the Black community. And so there were some properties that were identified, and there were two residential properties on a lot, and one was made into their headquarters, and the other property was developed into a youth-focused cultural space where we had a technology center, a music studio, and a library. And so basically without any of the resources that went into developing our what was supposed to be our museum and cultural center, which turned out to be $25 million, we basically turned a negative space into a positive institution just to once again show what the need was for our community development. And so that project basically was the incubation center for many of the Africa Town initiatives. And the festival and parade is actually the continuation of the parade and festival that initially started off as what was called the East Madison Mardi Gras parade and festival in the late 1940s. And so that's a continuation of that tradition actually in our community. And so for 3 days, you have, you know, our culture, you have vendors and business activities, and it's a microcosm of what we want to see Africatown be year-round in various institutions in our community, meaning our positive culture, our creative talent, our business activity, and intergenerational positive activity that happens for 3 days in the summer, the first weekend of August. And we invite people to come out and experience during that time. Seattle is beautiful in the summer, and the event is wonderful. So we love to have this as one of the destinations of our diaspora, you know, in the States. Come and visit us, and we'll come and visit you, and we get the list, and we'll just, you know, go around our countries seeing the positive and supporting the positive development in our communities.
Well, you already have a stream of young black millennials, tech, STEM folks already headed out that way and contributing to what you're doing. I know the spirit of your granddad and your father are proud of the work you're doing. You're walking in their footsteps. Before we leave the air this evening, Brother Joaquin, I'm going to connect you with Brother Klingman and Sister Nataki to move forward with some of the things that you guys discussed this evening. But before we leave tonight, give out any information how people can see the projects, see what you're doing. I'm going to keep in touch with you because I kind of want to follow things, the groundbreaking and when the first building opens, me and Brother Richard are going to buy some tickets and fly out to Seattle.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
We'd love to have you as honored guests. We'd love to have you as distinguished guests, ambassadors. That's what we look at. As we move around, we're all ambassadors from our various communities. AfricatownSeattle.com is one place that people can follow. Also, we are on social media, Facebook. You can keep up with a lot of the events and activities there, Africatown Central District on Facebook. Send us an email and get connected. One of the things that we're really looking for right now is we're looking for black architects and designers to help us design Africatown. So we want to source ideas. So if you're in touch or if there's any that are listening, we want to get some of that energy as we develop our Africatown design guidelines, and then we can share those with all of our communities that are developing. So those are a couple of things, and just stay tuned, and please send us examples of the positive work that's happening in your community, because we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We just want to bring the best of what we've done and what we're doing into the spaces that we are here in Seattle and Africatown.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. And Brother Klingman, before you leave this evening, give out the information. The people hear the advertisements, but still give out the information on joining 1 million conscious contributors and voters.
Yeah, just go to IamOneOfTheMillion.com. You can join there, but I ask that you read through the information and decide if this is something you want to participate in, because we are looking for members who will participate in some form or fashion. My website is blackonomics.com. Anyone wants to get in touch with me, please do by email or by phone. My phone number is on my website. And again, I congratulate the young brother, Joaquin, for developing a model that we can all be proud of. It's an asset-based model, not a deficit-based model. And we need many more of those. So thank you, my brother. I look forward to talking to you. And I definitely want you to talk to John Brown of the Bedford Group down in L.A. Architects, anybody, any service you need, he can help you with that.
And Sister Nataki?
Wonderful.
Sister Nataki, still there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I didn't know.
Oh, no. I just want you to give out the information on the folks getting information on Let'sBuyBlack365.com. Also, the social media site, because I heard Brother Joaquin said that he was on Facebook, but he's probably not aware of the Let's Buy Black 365.com social media site.
Yeah, definitely start with the word let's, as in collectively, let's buy black365.com. You can, on Google or Android, type it in, no spaces, let's buy black365.com, and download both apps. One is a crowdsourced business directory that has businesses listed by people who just want to connect with other resources and want to share information. And the Connect app is a black social network, because we have said that we can't keep talking about black liberation on social networks not owned and controlled by us, especially those that are owned and controlled by the people who we are doing this work to fight against. So, you know, everything is, it's not all political. We do, you know, you can do all the same things you do on other social networks, but let's buy black365.com, and we have weekly calls, and you can go to the website let's buy black365.com.
I want to thank everybody for being with us this evening, and I'll be in touch, Brother Wai-King, and I'm going to put you in touch with Brother Klingman and Sister Nataki.
Just want to say thank you for the opportunity. This has been very encouraging, and your media outlet and are critical. You know, communication is critical, so I thank you for the work of building and maintaining a media outlet that actually does connect us to the ideas and people that we need to be connected with to move forward.
Thank you, brother, and I'll be in touch with everybody. We'll be right back.
Take care, brother.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m. with your Elliot.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here. As many of you know, last March, when it was announced that I was no longer in the Black Muslim movement, it was pointed out that it was my intention to work among the 22 million non-Muslim Afro-Americans and to try and form some type of organization or create a situation where the young people, our young people, the students and others, could study the problems of our people for a period of time and then come up with a new analysis and give us some new ideas and some new suggestions as to how to approach a problem that too many other people had been playing around with for too long. And that we would have some kind of meeting and determine at a later date whether to form a black nationalist party or a black nationalist army. There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people. And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with.
The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you who don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man. The man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Brother Richard, interesting program this evening with Brother Y. King.
And it becomes hope. I don't want to use the word hopeful. I mean, just to see the potential of development and the conceptual framework that I'm being such here that I can identify with, even with just the symbolic reference of Africatown and the technological reference of Black Dot. I mean, you can't ask for more.
It's powerful. It's powerful. And, you know, being that a lot of our people, you know, we stand on the sidelines, some of them, a segment of our people, and they want to see things being done. In a couple of months, they'll see the groundbreaking, they'll see things being done, and then maybe some of our people will start saying, hey, wait a minute. If they can do it, maybe we can do it here. We can do it in our cities, in our towns, in our communities, and it'll spread. Because it just takes one person in anything. It just takes one person to get out there, and the next thing you know, other people join, which is a good thing. I'm glad that he mentioned on the air this evening that other tech-savvy young minds have been funneling and participating in the project, even from a distance. Mm-hmm. So that shows that people are watching and know what's going on. And then they've tapped into young black STEM folks that are working in some of those companies out there, Microsoft and others. So this is no joke what they're doing. They're reaching out to black architects to design some of the other buildings. There's other buildings involved in that whole Africatown project beside the main building that's named after his granddad's bank, the Liberty Bank building. So I know that the spirit of his grandfather and his father smiling on yes. him. They see a grandson that ain't out there just living his life or kicking up his heels on the weekend. They got a grandson out there working to preserve the image of his family and of his granddad and his father. His father founded the Black Museum out there. His granddad founded the first bank in the West Coast. And he's the mover and shaker and the groundbreaker behind the Africatown Seattle project. So that's a family heritage to be proud of, man.
It's definitely something we like you said, we can be proud of. And I have to say, Elliot, as you close us out, the emphasizing that he's looking at, repeating what you said, that we can be able to participate. I mean, we don't have to be there, and we can be helpful. As Time for an Awakening was helpful in being able to, because what happened was some networking or reinforcement that networking was occurring through this communication outlet.
Yeah, I was shocked that Brother Klingman mentioned some of the people, and he was already in touch with them. Mm-hmm. Sister Nataki mentioned some folks, and he it's amazing, man.
Yeah, and that's the power of having to communicate, which you always speak to, having a communication vehicle. So to be able to recognize that the human capital is there, that the financial capital is there, and that the communication system is there is like really necessary, and that a project that we can see that is developing that we can all be supportive of, that's, you know, as Bob McClayman said, you know, doing that one, being able to support that one thing and show it grows, then we can do more and more. And it can happen, and it is happening.
Mm-hmm. It is happening. I want to thank you for pulling my coat, man, because I wasn't aware, man. I'm glad that things work out like they're supposed to, put it that way.
Yeah, it is, you know, as it's there, and it, you know, and that's the power. We, as we continue to learn, and that's what this information, this communication, and this kind of outlet is. And now you have Sister POC on, and another sister coming on, which would bring other information and communication. The possibility of speeding up the networking, the connecting those dots, is always there, and we're always learning and looking for where we are. Where are we, and how do we support each other? It's going to be more things that we can be able to share and connect with as time goes on.
And before we leave the air this evening, I just want to remind everybody about Revive with hosts Proof of Consciousness, Sister Proof of Consciousness is host of Revive. She's on Wednesday evenings, 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening, and she's also on Sunday mornings, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. So catch her show. It's directed towards Black millennials. Interesting topics they deal with. She had an interesting show today talking about education of youth, you know, which they're a part of. She's director of communications at Cheney University, so she's recently graduated and back contributing and giving back. So that's what it's all about. And we'll be adding another program out off of the West Coast, Shifting Paradigms. Sister Zion will be joining us very shortly, probably before the 1st of March. So Time for Awakening outlet is growing. That's what always the vision was for Time for Awakening, to not only be on here, this program, but to grow the brand. And that's what it's about, man. That's what we do.
Yes, sir.
I want to thank everybody for being listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday at 8 to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.